Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Mum and Mama podcast. I should say this because it's every couple of weeks now. So this couple of weeks episode of the Mum and Mama podcast. Happy Christmas. Hey, it's Christmas Eve. Well, it is if you're listening to this when it comes out. Happy Christmas Eve. Are you excited? Are you stressed? Please don't be stressed. Whatever happens, happens. It's, you know, it's Christmas, isn't it? Just rest. Cuddle people you like and want to cuddle if they want to be cuddled. Have nice things to eat and drink. And be thankful that you've got a roof over your head and people to love, if that's the case. If it's not, I'm very sorry. So I went on a Christmas do last night, yesterday, at the time of recording this. We did the bake-off. They've got a bake-off tent in East London. And I had the time of my life. It was the most fun. We had to make a chocolate log, Yule log, which I normally make. So we already had a bit of a head start. But we just had such a laugh. And it was just like being in the bake-off tent. And it was so nice to bake with room. Because my kitchen's slightly larger than a shoebox. And it was so nice to just have space and things that you needed in the right place rather than stacked on top of each other in little cupboards. But it was so much fun. I had a lovely day, apart from my purse getting nicked out of my handbag because I made the very stupid mistake of putting my bag on the floor, even though we were in a bar and there was no one else in there. Unfortunately, it's a bit of a crime hotspot where we were. And yeah, it was a stupid mistake. But I didn't notice for ages, obviously, because I was having too much fun. The people that nicked it spent it in Tesco's and corner shops and food place. So I'm a bit like, if they've bought food and drink and alcohol, they obviously need it more than I do. Or they're doing it for people that need it more than I do. And you know what? Happy Christmas. My bank has been amazing. I've already got my new debit cards on my online account so I can pay for stuff. And they've refunded everything they spent. I think they spent about £400. It wasn't the end of the world. I mean, they're lucky that I've got an overdraft. but that was a bit of not a nice thing to realise when I got home after having such a lovely day. But I wasn't injured or held at knife point. So, yes. But don't ever put your bag on the floor, but do go to the bake-off tent. It wasn't in the bake-off place, it was at a bar around the corner. But it's a lot of fun. If you like baking or just doing things that are fun, then do it. This week, I'm talking about microdosing magic mushrooms with my mate Naomi. And, well, you'll hear all about it in the podcast, but it's very interesting. I'm very interested in it. And this might answer some questions if you have any, but I will see you on the other side.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Work.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm all excited. Welcome back, Naomi.
I know. Second time.
Second time.
Yes.
Oh, very privileged. You're not here this time.
No.
Because you're in Brighton now, aren't you?
I am. I know.
Brighton.
Lots has changed.
When did you go? How long has it been?
6 months.
Okay.
We left London in, well, we actually left London in March, and then we moved in with my mum, and then we moved to Brighton in April.
Okay. I feel like you've been there for a lot longer.
Yeah, it does feel that way.
It feels like that should where you should have always been, in a
weird
way.
Yeah, it's funny to hear you say that, though. Yeah, it's it feels like we have been here forever. It's funny.
You love it.
We do really like it. Yeah, we do. It's still such, we feel like when we look out the front door and we can see the sea, it is still a little bit like we're on holiday.
Yeah.
You know, it still feels, that part feels a novelty, but you know, it takes a while, doesn't it, to know where everything is and find the shops that you like, and the, you know, the kids, we're home educating the children, and so it's taken a while to kind of settle into that also. But yeah, I thought I would miss my old house in London, and of course I miss the people there, but I haven't thought about the old house, or it's like we don't look back. We're just looking into the future. So it's definitely been the right decision for us.
Yeah. Well, it feels like it's the right decision.
And yeah.
It's such a lovely house.
Thank you.
Just before we get on to the whole microdosing stuff.
Yeah.
How is the homeschooling going? How are you finding that? Because are you... before you were working as a doula, weren't you? You've stopped doing that now, haven't you?
So, yeah, I still consider myself a doula, actually, but I don't attend births.
Yeah.
But I still do some work around pregnancy and the postpartum, but I don't do, and I don't attend anything in person. So I do some virtual doula type things, and I consider what I do now as well doulaing, just not necessarily with birth. But yes, I mean, when we lived in London, I was obviously working full time as a birth doula, and home educating was something that I've always been really interested in, and I had some friends who home educated, and it wasn't so much that their children had problems at school, although my middle son Max never fully settled. He's 9, and I actually kept him back a year, which was a good decision, I feel. So when we left he was in year 3 but should have been in year 4. I think I'm right in saying that. And he up until that point, he never was very overly happy being there.
Yeah.
He would often be upset in the mornings, and you know, we'd have to really persuade him to go in some days. But my other two, my 12-year-old and Mark, who went to secondary, and Archie, who's 7, they were fine going in, and there wasn't any real problems. It was more just, I wanted more flexibility in our life. Ultimately, yeah. I was thinking, you know, we like to travel and have experiences away from home. And
yeah.
it, obviously, when they're in full-time school, that's so difficult. I mean, it's yeah. doable for sure. But then you're also paying this premium for going away yeah. in outside of, I know, you're paying a premium, aren't you, to go away yeah. in holiday time that the school sets. But also there was various things that I wasn't so keen on that they were learning at school. And the way that school is just set up, there were parts of that that I didn't feel so comfortable with. Yeah. And so when we decided, obviously, the last time I was on this podcast, I was talking about my time in Costa Rica, when we went to yeah. Costa Rica for a few months. And really, that was the catalyst of all this recent change. And, you know, I kind of, when we decided we were going to move, I thought this is going to be an opportunity now to have a different schooling yeah. opportunity for the boys. And I wasn't totally sure how that was going to look. But when we decided on Brighton, I saw that there was a number of different alternatives to school, mainstream school, one of them being this home education hub that they go to in the centre. Actually, it's in Hove. And they go there. Well, Harry goes there, my eldest goes there every day, but he can pick and choose what subjects he wants to do. And it's workshops and activities, and it's done, it's quite project based, so it's not sort of the typical sit down lessons yeah. that you get in school. And it's very child led and much smaller group sizes. And yeah, they, I mean, he loves it, and my other two go there as well, my younger two. And they also do forest school, and they also go to this art club. And we don't start, they don't start until 11, 12 o'clock. So we have this really lovely morning routine where we don't have to, you know what it's like. The more, I used to really, really not like the mornings, because it was just like getting up early, making the packed lunch, you know, it's just stress. It was just so yeah. much stress, and
yeah.
and sort of rushing everybody out the door. And now it's just, you know, we get up and we have breakfast together, and we can, it's just so much more relaxed there. And in terms of like our nervous systems, I've really noticed we're not so, because we're starting the day off in a much more relaxed way.
Yeah,
I feel like my nervous system is much more regulated for the rest yeah. of the day, because I'm not starting the day, you know, with high levels of cortisol trying to get the kids out the door. So that's been a real blessing as well. And also just to have the freedom and flexibility. The other day we decided that we weren't going to go to the home ed place, and we went to the Royal Pavilion, which yeah. I had been to actually, but the kids hadn't. And I was just like, I think they'd really love it. And we went on like a Monday when I knew there was going to be nobody there really. And we had the run of the place to ourselves. Yeah. And it was just so nice to be able to do that and not have to ask permission, or, you know, this is just what we're doing today. Yeah. We want to go and look around the Royal Pavilion. And yeah, it's, you know, it, but also it's, takes up a lot more of my time.
Yeah, so what are you, are you teaching them as well then?
No.
Yeah.
No, no, that's not, that was never on the cards, shall we say. I would, I don't have the patience. Yeah. I, there's not one bit of me that wants, I don't think they would, you know, they know a lot about mushrooms from me, but they don't, no, I don't think it, I don't have the mentality or the patience or the discipline to kind of sit down and go through things with them. I think our relationship is, it would be detrimental to our relationship yeah. to do that. Harry, for sure, would not sit down and sort of learn from me. So no, there's no, like, so I'll take them places, you know,
yeah.
and we'll, like, so the Royal Pavilion's educational, obviously, and we'll do things like that, and we'll read, and we'll do puzzles, and we'll play board games, and I'll do those things with the children. But yeah. in terms of, like, me trying to, I mean, to be honest, I, like, maths, I mean, they could probably teach me. I have no idea. I you know, that's, you know, I don't have the skill set to teach anything like that. But I think teaching and learning doesn't have to be sitting down, does it? And going through textbooks. It's,
no, 100%.
We find we do that in other ways. And, you know, the travel. And they like to hear about the travels. I travelled a lot as a child, and we talk about that a lot. They're super interested in that part of my life. So, and there's a lot to learn from that as well. So, yeah, we kind of, you know, I do teach them things, but not in a traditional sense. And so outsource it. I basically outsource it to other people.
So will they do their, because I totally get, like, I mean, it's lovely. It's the dream, isn't it? And the kids must absolutely love it.
Yeah.
But being in the world that we live in, as it is now, you obviously, people look at what qualifications you've got and everything, don't they? So I remember you saying that, is Harry doing a business GCSE or
so yeah there now? Is yeah so he is actually he's just he's started a two-year pathway to three different GCSEs that he's asked to do. That's maths, science, the double science award, and computer science. He's very like Aidan. He's into tech, he loves science stuff, he finds maths really easy. And you know, you do need qualifications for sure. Although these days, I think the difference is from when we grew up, where I think it was, it's interesting because I think if you know that you want to be in an academic career, if you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a lawyer, you know, any of those kind of professions, then really you do need to take the more traditional route.
Yeah.
However, it's not to say that you cannot be those things if you don't take GCSEs, etc. And there are alternatives that I'm just learning about now. There are other ways, and I think colleges are much more open to other skill sets other than just the traditional GCSEs. Yeah. But I said to my boys, you know, I mean, one thing to say is me and Aidan are really trying to encourage the boys to think about creating their own businesses when they're older and finding ways of having a passive income stream and, you know, finding out what their passions are and how they can use those passions to sustain themselves financially in the future. And I think that, I think a big part of that will be the future for our children. You know, so many people are working remotely, online, creating their own businesses.
Yeah.
And I think that is a really amazing part of technology that enables us to do that. Yeah. And it's obviously what I do. And actually, it is a pathway that Aidan hopefully is going to go into in the future as well, create his own business and give him the freedom to work more remotely and we can travel more, etc. So that's kind of, we're kind of hoping and modeling to our children that you don't have to follow the traditional route of, you know, GCSEs and A levels and degrees. And there's nothing, not that I'm saying there's anything wrong with that, but that style doesn't suit all children. Yeah. And doesn't always mean that you're going to end up with a good job. And I think actually Aidan is a really great example of that. You know, Aidan absolutely hated school and failed at school.
Yeah.
He, in fact, I think he didn't even pass his maths GCSE. And I think he did business and he failed. Like, he did really badly. He wasn't interested. He was told he would amount to nothing. And when you look at Aidan now, I mean, Aidan has you know, very senior job in an investment bank and is super successful. And then I went down the much more traditional route, went to, you know, did GCSEs. I did well in my GCSEs. I did my A levels. I went to university. And yes, you know, you could say I've been fairly successful in my businesses, but I've never earned any sort of decent amount of money or been able to be in that way. And so I think it's always really interesting to see that, you know, the differences between me and Aidan reflecting how actually the reality is that it's often not your qualifications and the route that you took through school, which dictates how successful and what is success anyway? Yeah. What do we count as success? And actually, even though Aidan is, in the eyes of society, deemed successful, he's not really fulfilled or happy in what he does. And now he sees what I do and how fulfilling my work is. And he's going, and when we were in Costa Rica also, you know, so many people in that community were coaches and running their own businesses and making really profound impacts on other people's lives. And Aidan, it sort of opened Aidan's eyes to, you know, maybe I could do something that I really enjoy and makes a real difference to people's lives and still get paid for it. You know, and he's kind of, it's, you know, he's really coming into his own with that, you know, starting the journey with that. And so I think for our boys, you know, that is something we will encourage. But I also, I know that I have a lot of condition. It's been a journey for me also, because I know I still have a lot of conditioning myself about education and how learning should look. And it's been a real process for me to come away from that, you know, and ease up on when they first left school and we were in that interim period before we moved to Brighton and we were at my mum's. I was sitting down with them and getting them to do workbooks, and it was so stressful because they hated it and they didn't want to do it. And I thought, and I was listening to some podcasts of people who home educate, and I thought, actually, why am I doing this? Is it because I feel like this is what I should be doing because this is kind of the thing that they did at school? And why am I trying to recreate that environment at home? It's you know, that's just, I wasn't really thinking about it. I was just doing what I thought was expected. And so, I have said to them that I would like them to do at least 5 or 6 GCSEs because they have the option to do that. Just because at this moment in time, I think it can make your life easier. You know, like if you do want to go on and go to university, then it is easier if you have the basic GCSEs. I mean, I don't think you need loads. Like I did 13 GCSEs or something ridiculous. You have never, ever needed 13 GCSEs to do anything.
Yeah.
So it's just like, if you know, if they do the English, maths, science, and then you know, Harry wants to do computer science. He's even said he might want to do film studies. Max, I think, is much more artistic. I think he would want to do art GCSE. And but it's just, they actually, you know, Harry does about 6 hours a week on maths in terms of private tuition. So they do small group tuition at the home education hub and sort of a larger group one. So the amount of learning he is doing in a week compared to what he'd do at school is actually far greater. And he isn't having to do subjects that hold no interest to him. And I think there is benefit, obviously, in being exposed to lots of different subjects. But I think if you're nearly 13 and like Harry has never liked art.
Yeah.
He's no good at it. He doesn't enjoy it. He's done it his whole school career so far. He's never, you know, I think you can say by 13 whether you're going to go into art or not.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't have to do that anymore. And so instead he's doing stuff that he enjoys. And instead of now, also I've really noticed that they used to really be like, oh, it's school and I hate school and I hate learning. And already within 6 months, they're enthusiastic to go. They want to go. They can't wait to go. They don't say anymore, I hate learning, or because they're doing the things that interest them.
Yeah.
They're not having to do things that don't.
And so they're learning in a completely different environment. They're not with 30 other children who have differing levels and interests and behaviour.
I mean,
so in an ideal world, there'd be different types of schools for different types of learners, wouldn't there?
Because absolutely.
Not everyone learns the same way, and it's a shame, I suppose, that not everyone has that opportunity.
They don't. And also, you know, it is a privilege to be able to homeschool as well. I totally get that, because I am able to run them around to all these different places in the middle of the day. And also we're paying for them to do, you know, it's not hugely expensive, but it's still, school is free. And this is not. And so, again, you know, you have to be in a... If I was still full-time doulaing, I wouldn't be able to manage their home ed life. So, you know, there is also privilege involved that not everybody has access to, which is a shame. Like you say, it is a shame, because really most people don't have that choice.
But then I wonder how much it would cost to actually implement more diversity in a school system, and how much that would benefit the people that came out of it and society as a whole.
Oh, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but
I know,
you
obviously
know,
it would cost a lot, but
the benefits would be huge.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, I probably would be someone classed as a conspiracy theorist, but I do believe that there isn't always, like, the powers that be may not want the future generations being taught to not follow a certain narrative, to think outside the box, to be independent, to be sovereign, to have autonomy. That generally isn't the kind of things that are taught in mainstream anything, right? So
I did think when you said about you haven't got that rush in the morning, I just thought, how lovely, I hate that. But then also, if you've got to get up and go to work in the morning, you know, most people do have to get up and get out in the morning, don't they? But for me, working from home, I mean, I started working from home before I had children. I used to get up, I got up when I woke up, you know. Because there wasn't that pressure. I didn't have to commute, which is amazing, you know.
Yeah. And so, this is also kind of what we're encouraging them to, like, you know, maybe not do the 9 to 5, don't work for the big corporations, like, do your own thing. I mean, Harry already earns, you know, he's only 12, but he earns money from some of the gaming platforms he's on. He earns money. The other week, he earned £100 in a week from TikTok. He has this gaming thing on Roblox where people pay to, and he earns a little bit of money from that. So, and then also Aiden teaches him about trading. There's a sort of a fake trading platform thing that children can practice on. And so that's something that Aiden is keen on. Once the boys get to a certain age, get them trading. So, yeah, we're very much steering them, I guess, into, you know, I would support my boys. Obviously, if there was a job that they really wanted to do and it was the 9 to 5 and it was a more traditional role, obviously. But I think not for my boys, actually, because we've shown, you know, all the experiences that we've had and this new way of learning. And also, you know, Aidan and I have got plans for the future that involve more travel. And especially when Aidan comes away from working in such a corporate job, I think it would be more likely the boys won't have that waking up and having to get into work for 9 so much.
Well, if you've seen a different way of life, I mean, most people never get to see that things can be a bit different, can it? When you do just kind of come up, your parents are an example for you, and you know, and you just kind of, this is the way things are, and you don't really know that there might be a different way.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
The world is changing.
It is. And I think, you know, for all the downsides of the internet and, you know, being online, etc., there are many benefits. And I think one of them is this possibility of, you know, you have the world at your fingertips and the endless possibilities for advertising yourself and your services and your business ideas. And it is a whole different world out there now.
Yeah, it is.
And it's like, I really want to encourage them to use that to their advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's lovely. And they're lucky that they have parents who are very supportive and can give them opportunity, you know, it's...
Yeah.
But so that leads on to...
So it's a whole homeschool episode.
Yeah. Having your mind opened in different ways.
Yes.
How did you get into the whole mushroom thing?
Yes. So... The mushrooms, so really, it only really started in 2020. And I had I was working obviously as a birth doula, and I actually was super traumatized by what I was seeing happening in the maternity system with pregnant women during the pandemic. I had some really, really distressing situations with clients where, you know, I wasn't allowed access to them during the experience and, you know, various things that traumatized them and me. And I kind of spiraled into this pit of anxiety at the end of 2020. And there wasn't really, I'm not somebody who, I really didn't want to go down the traditional route. You couldn't actually really get to see your GP anyway at that time. But I watched two documentaries on Netflix. One was Fantastic Fungi, and the other. Oh, you must watch it. I watched it at the weekend again. It's so fantastic. But it isn't actually about microdosing, but it is about mushrooms, obviously. And the other one, I can never remember the name of it, but it was about the studies that they're doing at Imperial College London around treatment-resistant depression and larger doses of mushrooms. And it was kind of from watching those documentaries that Aidan and I decided maybe we'll try microdosing mushrooms. Yeah. We'd heard some things that it could help with anxiety. And also Aidan was also, we were both burning out and, you know, so I can't even hugely remember where we got the mushrooms from or anything like that. But we had this year of microdosing very badly. We didn't really know what we were doing. In hindsight now, I can see we were taking far too high a dose. We didn't know anything about cycles or protocols or finding different doses. We were just totally winging it.
Yeah.
With varying degrees of success. In fact, at some points, it was making my anxiety worse. And we did also a couple of larger doses, which one was really fantastic. The other one was truly horrendous. And so sort of that was that. And I was also learning about other things to help with my anxiety. And I really heavily got back into meditation and breath work and that sort of thing also. And then obviously we went to Costa Rica. So we went, Aidan took a sabbatical from work. I pulled the children out of school and we went to Mexico and we went to Costa Rica, but we stayed in this, you know, community, spiritual community on the west coast of Guanacaste in Costa Rica. And it was here everybody microdosed. And plant medicine was a huge thing. I did a mushroom ceremony there, and you could buy microdosing mushrooms from the apothecary, like in the local town. And Aidan did ayahuasca, and we did peyote. So we really had a lot of different plant experiences. But I felt a really strong connection to the mushrooms. Like the mushrooms were the thing that really resonated with me, and I felt were the most helpful in terms of my anxiety. And then when we returned to London, I was like, right, I really want to work with mushrooms. And also on that journey, and I know I spoke about this on the last podcast, I saw pregnant women microdosing and taking larger doses, as well as in the postpartum. And I felt very drawn to that also. And so on my return to the UK, it's weird how the universe works, but I actually had a couple of clients reach out to me who said they were microdosing during pregnancy, and I kind of supported them through that process. But at the same time, I found the Microdosing Institute, and the Microdosing Institute is an organization based in Amsterdam, and it's considered one of the leading educational authorities in the world in terms of microdosing. And I saw that they were running 6-week coached program. And I thought, wow, I mean, that sounds amazing. It was all online, obviously. And so I did this 6-week online program. So obviously you have to source the microdosing yourself if you don't live in Amsterdam, which I did. And you had weekly calls, and you had a mentor that you had a call with each week. And it was really beautifully done. And it was so transformative. I realized how different the experience was being guided through it by experienced people versus me just trying to work it out by myself.
Yeah.
And it was not an easy experience. It was a huge roller coaster of emotions, and so much came up for me. But I was so well held in that space and supported by them. And when it came to the end of the experience, they said that they were starting a 10-month coaching program to teach people how to coach people through a microdosing experience. And it was the first ever cohort. And I was like, sign me up. Like, this is what I need to do. And so that's what I did, is I signed up with them. And it was, you know, pretty full on 10 months, you know, sort of 10 plus hours a week of study and regular calls and things you had to work through, etc. And it was transformative. And also throughout that process, I started coaching people through the Institute. So part of the process was actually doing that for real. And then the coaches would feed back to the Institute, etc. But it was also on this program that I met Dr. James Faderman, who is someone who is very well known in the microdosing space. He's a psychiatrist from America who was at Harvard University with Ram Dass, you know, Ram Dass. He's sort of like an American guy. He moved to India and he became a spiritual guru. And he used psychedelics and was a big advocate for psychedelics. And it was the era of like Timothy Leary, you know, the guy in America who kind of encouraged a lot of the counterculture use of psychedelics again, and was very against the Vietnam War. And so Dr. James Faderman was sort of, in that era. Yeah. And he was somebody who became really interested in microdosing. And microdosing is not a new thing. It's an it's an indigenous practice that's happened forever.
Yeah.
And also, you know, actually, there's a theory called the stoned ape theory, which is actually, you know, within our human evolution, if you look at the history of that, we had a monumental leap in our consciousness and our development when we were sort of, you know, turning from apes to humans.
Yeah.
There was this our prefrontal cortex really enlarged and expanded in a very short amount of time. And there's this theory that actually it was because of eating mushrooms. Yeah. And there's actually the theories kind of progressed onto, they think it could have been actually the pregnant ones that were eating the mushrooms, and then it creates this neurogenesis in the developing brain of the fetus. So it was creating this leap in understanding and connection that then we see play out in our human history, that actually psychedelics was a huge part of that. Yeah. And it's obviously not just that, but, you know, there is this theory that it played a huge role, and it kind of makes sense when you learn about how psilocybin, which is the active part of the magic mushroom, how that works, how it creates new neural pathways in the brain.
Does it work?
So it actually, it can change the structure and chemistry of your brain. It enables different parts of the brain to communicate. It creates new neural pathways. So you can actually create new thought patterns and ways of being and change your behavior through the practice of taking psychedelics. This is the magic of it and how it works. And it also
make my eyesight better.
I don't know about that per se. But yeah, it's it's not, it, there is studies, you know, that it can help with cognition and certain conditions definitely can help in terms of like chronic pain.
Yeah.
And things like that. But what I found is, in my experience and the experience of the people I've supported, is it just creates this, I mean, it does create an altered state of consciousness. When you're taking a microdose, you don't experience any, or you shouldn't experience any hallucinogenic effects. Yeah. But you do, you know, it's not that you don't feel anything, but, you know, I think what it does is it really creates greater awareness and connection to yourself. So often we know we're able to access information about ourselves that we normally wouldn't be able to, in order to progress in our life in whatever way that is. So, you know, you might be able to access information that would help you on a journey to improving your eyesight, rather than the psilocybin going in and actually being able to magically cure short-sightedness. So I met Dr. James Faderman. He taught some of the syllabus in the Microdosing Institute program, and he was very interested that I was working in the birth world and you know, had this interest in working with psychedelics in the birth world. And so we partnered up, as well as a woman called Michaela DeLamico, who is a Indigenous woman who lives in America and is probably the biggest trailblazer in the psychedelic space around plant medicines and parenthood. And the three of us have come together and we created this survey to collect stories of women all over the world who microdose during pregnancy and postpartum. And then Dr. Faderman will take the data from this survey and be able to put together statistics for people in order to reassure or to... So people, like women who want to do this, have some information that they can base a decision on. And obviously, like, the mainstream... in any circumstances, won't do research on pregnant women because it's considered unethical. What we're finding with microdosing is this is the demographic that need it, that are the most interested and who need it the most. Because
why is that? What is the benefit of doing it while you're pregnant or just
baby? I think it's a complex situation. And I think, you know, when you look at the statistics of how many pregnant women are on antidepressants, and also taking into consideration that the biggest cause of death in women in the first year postpartum is suicide, and the amount of women who are put on antidepressants postpartum, and the side effects of these antidepressants on developing fetuses and the women themselves are fairly toxic, even the ones considered safe.
They give antidepressants to pregnant women.
If women are already on antidepressants or they have a mental health crisis, there are certain antidepressants that are considered safe. Okay. For pregnancy, but like with any
obviously if you're already on them, but then I'm sure that my friend was on anxiety medicine and she was told she had to stop when she was pregnant.
There definitely are a huge proportion of anti-anxiety and antidepressant medication that you cannot take when you're pregnant, but there are some that are considered safe.
But
still they have, you know, they're never studied for the long-term effects. Everything in this research is always such short-term studies. But,
like you said, they can't test pregnant women, can they?
No, it's... Yeah, and you can kind of see why that might be. Yeah. But it also, you know, is then... You know, we need to find ways to support women in this time of their life, because it's really important that we honour women. Yeah. And also with mushrooms, you know, the toxicity of mushrooms is almost non-existent. And it isn't that there's no risk with taking psilocybin during pregnancy. And we cannot ever say that it's 100% safe.
Yeah.
And we can also say that it's not for everybody. Yeah, there are definitely people who are not suitable for microdosing or taking psychedelics. And this can involve on medications that you might be on. There are certain medications that do not react well with psilocybin. But it's also, you know, if you have a personal history of a very severe mental health diagnosis, like schizophrenia or bipolar or anything like that, some caution needs to be in place around taking psychedelics. And so also if someone is going through a mental health crisis in terms of like an emotional crisis, like if you've just experienced a bereavement of someone very close to you, that's probably not the time to start taking a microdose. Yeah. Actually, I mean, okay. Microdosing can be helpful, but not in the state of crisis.
Yeah.
And the reason for that really is because we know that psilocybin can amplify emotions. Okay. And so if you're going through a highly emotional time, it may not be the medicine for you right there and then. And so the benefits can be that often the reason pregnant women come to microdosing can be that they feel that they need support in how they're feeling. In terms of, they might feel like they need extra support in lifting their mood up. But also often it's about uncovering root causes of certain things. If they are highly anxious or they have a mild depression, then microdosing, especially under guidance, can be really, really helpful. And also a huge number of people coming to microdosing in pregnancy are because they want to create a greater connection between themselves and their baby and even the wider family. And I think this plays into the way our society is set up and it's not set up to support women. You know, and so in sort of more indigenous cultures, you know, pregnant women are revered and honoured and looked after, and they live in community, and you know, you have all the family and the villagers helping you with tasks, and you're held and supported in a loving space. The same during birth and the same during postpartum. So much postpartum depression is trauma from the birth. At least the official statistics are 1 in 3 women suffer from birth trauma. Yeah. And this is often because of the way that the maternity system operates. Yeah, it's not women centered. Yeah. And the amount of obstetric violence that happens is distressing. And so the statistics of 1 in 3, I think, is grossly underestimated.
Yeah.
But they go through, sometimes a common experience can be they go through pregnancy feeling really disconnected from themselves, from their baby, from their community. They have a really traumatic birth where they're not listened to, they're not respected. It was highly medicalized, high rate of intervention. And then they're just left in postpartum just to get on with it. And then we wonder why suicide is the number one cause of death in women in the first year postpartum. And, you know, microdosing can't solve all those problems, but it does create connection and it does plug you into a community who truly understands what you're going through, even if that community is online. But, you know, it is, I feel like microdosing during the parenthood journey is an act of self-love and a remembering of the ways in which it should, you know, it's such a rite of passage and a special time, and microdosing can really enable you to access what you need and to have the courage to ask for it and seek it out. And I think that's an element that is very much misunderstood. And it is, sadly, it is often the women who already have this understanding that come into it. And I wish it could be more available to women who don't understand how pregnancy and birth and postpartum could be. But actually, as my, we've created this survey. So if any of your listeners have experienced microdosing in pregnancy or the postpartum, or larger doses as well of mainly we're talking of psilocybin, so magic mushrooms, then they can they can fill out this survey anonymously and and tell their story, and we just, Dr. Vaderman will take the data from that and it will be used to really help other women in the future. And the aim is to get 1,000 stories.
Yeah.
But we've got about, I think it's, we're over 300 now. Okay. So we're doing pretty good. And it's, you know, all over the world. We've kind of...
Well, I'll definitely, I'll get the link and I'll share it.
Okay, great. Thank you. But it's also been interesting because I feel I'm also, I feel really pulled to support people outside of that birth space as well. So I kept getting people messaging me, you know, I'd really love to do a guided microdosing cycle. Is there anyone you can recommend who's in the UK? And I was just like, not really, actually. I don't really know of anybody who does that. And then I was like, maybe that's what I should do.
Yes,
and so I did. I created an 8-week program, which takes you through a microdosing cycle. And it gives you like the foundational knowledge of how to, how long you should microdose for, a protocol, so how many times within that time frame you microdose. Because microdosing, and I know you know a lot of this, but you can't take it every day indefinitely. And that's because of tolerance. You become tolerant to the psilocybin fairly quickly. And so what that means is that you would stop seeing the benefits.
Yeah.
And you'd have to keep taking larger and larger and larger doses, and it would get to a point where it was ridiculous very quickly. And so when we're microdosing, what we need to do is take regular, be consistent, but take regular breaks throughout a cycle. So a cycle is the length of time you're microdosing for. And so that can be really anything from 4 to 10 weeks.
Yeah.
And at the end of that time, you take, you know, a good couple of weeks off before starting a new cycle. And then within that cycle, you're looking at how often shall I take it within the 4 to 10 weeks.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could be one dose every 3 days, or every other day, or 5 days in a row. Or you can microdose around your menstrual cycle, around the lunar cycle. There are many different ways to dose and to the protocols. And then also it's about finding the right dose for you, because, you know, there isn't just one dose that suits everybody.
Yeah.
And so there is a process of calibrating and going through and trying different doses, and also understanding that your dose may change depending on many external and internal factors. So depending on your emotional state, what's going on in your life, where you are in your cycle, what your diet is like, how you're feeling, how your day looks, all these things can impact your dose. And so I created these programs to give people the basic understanding of how to do that, so that moving forward, they have the skills and the knowledge to microdose successfully themselves. But also, you know, I've also kind of incorporated, I've been doing an energy healing diploma with an amazing lady called Jenny Harrison, and that's been over, I think it's been a year now, maybe just over, where I'm learning how to energetically cleanse myself and protect myself and my space, and hold others in a kind of energetic, more of an energetic way, and understand emotional development cycles. So going back from when you were in your mother's, you know, womb, and how your mother's nervous system and emotional and physical and spiritual journey affects you in utero and for the first 7 years of your life, and how those cycles play out in terms of physical symptoms, emotional things, how you are, how you interact with the world, how you perceive your world, etc., and understanding that from an energetic perspective. And so I kind of bring that into the 8-week program as well, to give people basic tools on how it's really, a lot of it's about regulating your nervous system, because I'm also now training to be a somatic therapist, which is someone who is able to help others heal from trauma, not only from a psychological perspective, but from a body perspective. So releasing it, because we store trauma in our bodies.
Yeah.
And how do we process that trauma in a safe way from not only our mind, but our body also? And a huge part of that is learning about the vagus nerve and polyvagal theory, which is about how understanding the nervous system states and recognizing the state that you live in most of the time. And for most of us, that's fight or flight.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And how we can very gently and in a very trauma-informed way go through exercises and techniques that help us tone our vagus nerve so that we have more ability and capacity to hold different emotions in our body, but always coming back to a more regulated state.
Yeah.
And I think we do know that when you are in a regulated state, your ability to heal is much greater. And so I feel like with the microdosing, if you learn these techniques of how to be more regulated, you're going to have a bigger, more profound experience with the microdosing, because your body is going to be able to take in the insights and lessons more than if you're activated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of techniques are they?
I mean, I'm just starting this journey with the somatic training. It's an 18-month journey, and I started only a month ago, so it's very new. But the vagus nerve is something I've been interested in for quite a long time, and I had a very basic knowledge of it, and this is just taking me much, much deeper. But sorry, what was the question?
What kind of techniques? Is it like physical or?
Yes. So it is things, it's a combination of things. It's some breath work, it's meditation, but it's also, you know, physical movements to help. Because also what I find really interesting, and this is a really good way to explain it, is if you look at other mammals in nature, and if you look at a rabbit, and there's, you know, a tiger nearby, and the tiger goes to attack the rabbit, often if the rabbit knows it can't run away, it will play dead.
Yeah.
And that's called the freeze state. And we have that ability. When we go into freeze, we shut down, we dissociate. Yeah. And but when the danger has gone away, you'll see the rabbit will sort of come back to life, and they do this shaking thing. They shake.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is they're processing the trauma. So they shake out the trauma, and then they bounce away, and then they're eating grass. Yeah. And you're just like nothing happened, because they are in a regulated, they're able to access fight and flight and freeze when it's needed, because it's for sure needed in that situation. But they're able to come back to their ventral vagal, which is their, you know, more zen states.
Yeah.
Because they process the trauma. We as humans have lost the ability in a lot of circumstances to properly process our trauma. So we go into fight or flight, or we go into freeze, and we never fully come out.
Yeah.
And so somatic therapy is about, one part of it is about completing that cycle. So learning how to, and you don't, you know, it's just skills for life in which you can, it's not about being in a zen state all the time.
Yeah.
It's about knowing, you know, it's really important that we go into fight or flight or freeze. Those are important parts of our nervous system. They're not the enemy. But it's also learning how we need to come out of them and live in a more regulated state.
Yeah.
Because our nervous systems cannot cope with being in those heightened, agitated states all the time. And, you know, a lot of people, I know that I live in fight or flight a lot. And actually, very few of us go into a regulated state very often. Some people have never been in a regulated state ever.
Yeah.
Especially if they've suffered abuse from childhood. They are constantly on alert, looking for perceived danger, and they don't even realise it. They don't know they're in fight or flight.
And I heard something the other day. You know when you're asleep, like mums are always listening out.
Yeah.
Because I will wake up. I'm very good at sleeping.
very good at sleeping. But if something happens in the night with one of the kids, I will wake up straight away.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be stuff going on outside and I won't hear it. But when it's them, someone said that it's like when you're asleep, your brain is still a certain amount actively listening.
Yeah.
And I just thought, no wonder we don't. We're always knackered.
I know, isn't it? But it's also really interesting because our physiology is connected to our children. And especially when they're newborns, our newborn's physiology is we are one dyad with our babies. And we can regulate our baby's temperatures. We can control their respiratory rate. We can, you know, control their blood sugar. We are insanely connected to their physiology. Yeah. And I think that plays a part in it. And I know what you mean. Like when you wake up a second before they're going to be sick or something. Yeah, have you ever done, you know, like, or, you know, or one of them would breathe funny in another room, I'd be awake.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And often as well, people come to microdosing in the postpartum because they want a deeper connection with their children. And microdosing, yeah. So many thousands of reports from microdosing of parents who feel the benefit of greater connection with their children in,
yeah.
You know, and the postpartum is forever, right? It's not just...
Yeah, yeah.
When they're super little. So
yeah,
it's not just new mums that come to microdosing for that connection. It can be mums of teenagers, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We're about to enter that delightful stage. So So, it's interesting. I'm really trying to combine what I'm learning on the somatic therapy with the energetic stuff as well and the microdosing. Yeah. And I think the blend of those things together are magical in themselves. And it just gives people, you know, like practical tools and techniques that they can use in their everyday life. And so many people, I think, are having spiritual awakenings or going on a spiritual journey or even just thinking there's got to be more to life than this, or you know, I feel like there's a void in my life, or you know, just I've lost my mojo, or you know, anything like that. I just want to feel better and happier and feel joy in my life. And you know, microdosing can bring all those things to people. And
Lola's just come upstairs and just had a wee, and right. You're totally going to hear that on the podcast. I'm going to have to edit that out.
Wee quieter, Lola.
Oh my god. I just remember walking home from the gym, and you told me that you were microdosing, and you said that you just felt clearer. Your brain just felt clearer, and you said that you were doing it for your anxiety and whatever. And
yeah.
Obviously, I was perimenopausal, and my brain's always going 10 to the dozen. I never remember anything, so I was like, brilliant, I'll try this then.
Yeah.
And, you've helped me find my right protocol, and I did it before I had my surgery, and then I stopped for a while, I think, because I just wasn't well, and I was like, well, there's no point, but then I've started back on it, and... I just feel really good. But I was talking to my friend about it, and I was saying there's so much going on with me. Like, I'm over my surgery now. I'm obviously relieved because I'm not living with chronic pain and stress. I'm on HRT, and that all seems, touch wood, that all seems to be going all right.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of stuff that would make me feel better.
Yes.
But I do, like, I haven't had the... autumn blues this year for the first time in, well, for as long as I can remember. I never get it too bad, but I just am aware that I'm a bit glum, but I know what it is, and I just feel a bit shit, but you know, whatever. But I haven't had that at all. I just feel nice, and I feel like I'm giving myself a cuddle.
I love it. Yeah.
And I keep cuddling people as well.
Oh, I love that.
No, I mean, I'm a bit of a cuddler anyway.
Yeah, but
I do feel
spreading
like
the love.
Yeah, and I feel drawn, like if someone's a bit sad, I feel drawn to comfort them more. And I'm definitely, I've always been a bit of an empath. I hate it when people say that because I just think, all right, mate. But I do feel like I feel people's pain a bit, or I do definitely have great sympathy for people. And I definitely feel that that is even more so. But yeah, but on the whole, I feel great. And I just, I can't say 100% it is the mushrooms, but I think it is the mushrooms.
I mean, this is the thing. It is such a subtle experience. And people will often say, oh, you know, everything in my life is going much better and things flow better and I'm in a better mood. And I don't know if it's the mushrooms. And obviously, I have a sort of, I always feel it is. But also, at the end of the day, does it really matter?
Well, exactly. And that's what I said. It's like, it doesn't, I don't care what it is because I feel good.
Yeah.
So whatever it is, but I know that it is because I know that it is because I do feel different.
Yeah.
But my sister has, my whole family are on it now. So my sister's taken it because she gets really bad seasonal, what isn't it?
Seasonal affective disorder.
She gets it really bad. And so she started and she's absolutely fine. Feels fine.
Yeah.
Mum and dad on it because my dad's had a stroke. What would be 13 years ago? No, 12 years ago. Next week, I think. And they're old. They're like, he's 81 and my mum's 82.
Yeah.
He's fine, but sometimes his brain, he has trouble finding the words.
Yeah, yeah.
And my mum gets a bit of anxiety now. She's getting a bit older. So,
yeah.
And they both feel, like you said, it's not like a marked, you know, you don't feel like you've taken something, but you just feel a bit better.
It's very difficult experience to explain, isn't it? Because there are we don't really have the vocabulary for it, and it isn't at all the same as a pharmaceutical medication. So it is really difficult to kind of explain to people that, you know, you do feel something, but it's not, it is so subtle that you, it can make you think, is what I'm feeling because I'd feel that anyway, or is that, and that there is the subtlety. And so it is a very subtle, but also can be hugely profound for people. You know, and so, and also so different for so many people. You know, some people don't feel any of the benefits for months, and then other people, the first time they try it, they feel different.
Yeah.
So it is, it's such a journey. And also there's no hard and fast rules. You know, like I, you know, I am someone who just has a lot of experience now myself and with supporting other people. But I am I don't like to ever think that any of us are the experts or that we know all this information and, you know, you're just going to do as I tell you as your microdosing guide. It isn't about that. It's about me supporting you through a journey of discovery and experimentation with the medicine yourself to see how it works for you and to give you the confidence and give you the framework in which to understand how the medicine works in in some ways, you know, especially around the tolerance. And also, you know, how if you want to make it into more of a spiritual experience, that there are ways in which you can really support that process with like setting intentions and integrating your experience. Because, you know, often people can have really profound insights into themselves and often about relationships or things that have happened in their past. The microdosing allows them to connect the dots and they'll have these insights. But if you don't take those insights and integrate them into your everyday life, like what are you learning from connecting those dots?
Yeah.
And how can you take that learning and how can you bring it into your everyday life so that your life is better for it?
Yeah.
You know, that can be the area in which a guide can really help you move through a spiritual journey much easier, more profoundly, because you're taking those lessons and learning how to take them forward and better your life.
Yeah.
And that can be done without, you know, like anyone can do that, but it can be easier with someone guiding you who has the knowledge and experience of having done it themselves and supported other people. But for sure, so many people say they feel just in a better place and in a better mood. It can really help with focus and motivation. Because I think a lot of the time, so many of us know what we need to do to feel better. We all know that we need to eat better, to exercise more. You know, like we know this stuff, yet we don't do it, you know. And microdosing can be the kick up the butt. It's like the thing that gets you out the door and doing the things you know you need to do to feel better. So in some ways, it's not always the microdosing that's doing that. The microdosing is giving you the focus and the motivation to go do those things that will make you feel better. So it's very nuanced and very subtle, but you know, if you can have some more joy and happiness and contentment in your life, happy days.
Well, exactly, and that's exactly what I want. He's like, I feel great, and that's all I want.
Of course. Why not?
Why not?
Like, surely our happiness is worth, you know, fighting for or discovering.
Exactly. So are you taking on clients? How do people just contact you and guide them?
So basically what I do is I run these 8-week programs. I'm running one at the moment, but that's nearly at the end and that was fully booked. I've got one in January, which I have one space left. And that I take up to, it's at the moment I'm supporting only in groups. I'm supporting women only. So I take up to 10 women in one group. So I will run a group in January and then in April and then in October next year. And afterwards, after each program, I offer the chance to do a retreat with a dose that you can intuitively choose yourself. So some people will take a larger dose and some will take a microdose and anything in between that. And obviously, as well, to say that it's important to know the legality of what you're taking. That also, microdosing isn't just about mushrooms. You can microdose many things. You can microdose medicinal mushrooms. You can microdose coffee, cannabis, even alcohol, supplements. There's a million things to microdose. It isn't just about magic mushrooms. And there is the legality issue. You know, it isn't legal everywhere. It is legal in some places. So it's always best to know, because there is always some risk involved with that when something is against the law. And that's
against the law here.
It is against the law here. It is a Schedule 1 Class A drug. I mean, it's beyond a Class A, which is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I know. And it will change at some point, but for now, unfortunately, and it's got nothing to do with health and safety and everything to do with politics and power. And there's a whole history to the prohibition of psychedelics, which is fascinating, but is a long story. But yes, it is illegal in the UK. And you know, so it's not
even microdosing.
So there is a risk involved with that. I don't provide medicine for people. So because it, you know, that then puts me in a position. Not illegal to talk about microdosing, but I cannot supply people with any microdosing substances. So that has to be that people source their own. And I, if they want support and information, then that's my role in that picture. So, I provide these programs, I provide these retreats, and I do one-to-one coaching as well, and for men. I have a few male clients at the moment. And also, I am looking to run some programs to help people with addiction issues, because we know that microdosing can be really helpful for people who suffer with addiction, especially a lot of research into alcohol addiction and smoking as well, giving up, smoking tobacco. microdosing can really, really help.
Because that's interesting, because I spoke to Nicole about doing it because I think that it would help her, but she's nervous because of her addiction.
It is something that people do feel nervous about if they have that history. But the way, and for sure, you can use mushrooms in a way that is not helpful or escaping reality. I have seen people do that, but it's non-addictive in that it's not something you can take all the time because of the tolerance issue. It just doesn't work. So you can't become physically addicted to it, but you can use it for sure as an emotional crutch or a way to escape reality. So there is that, you need to be mindful of that. And that's kind of why I'm really interested, you know, as someone who I'm in recovery myself, a long time in recovery, I feel like that maybe that's why I'm drawn to it. But creating these containers where people who want to come away from their addiction issues in a completely different framework and understand, you know, like, it's not going to be 12 step. It's not going to be cognitive behavioral therapy. It will be coming from the somatic approach.
Yeah.
Also, you know, someone who I hugely admire, Gabor Mate, who, you know, is an addiction and trauma specialist who's written loads of books and is quite a big name at the moment. I really admire his work and follow his work, and he does compassionate inquiry.
Yeah. I know who that. Yeah, Nicole's in. Yeah, she's sharing with me.
Yeah. He's a Hungarian guy. Yeah. So I feel like maybe I will go on, because you know me, I am the eternal student. But after my somatic therapy training, something I'm considering is to go on and do the compassionate inquiry training around addiction. Yeah. And he is someone who is very supportive of psychedelics and recovery from addiction.
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel like that's an area that I'm going to go into next.
Creating
a program. Yeah. So it's I feel hugely privileged that I can work in this space and so interesting and it's changed my life, and I feel passionate about spreading that information of how it can benefit people. And also, you know, the kind of activist side of it in terms of trying to get it legalized here in the UK. Yeah. There are things you can do, writing to your MP, and there's a really wonderful organisation called PAR Global, Psilocybin Access Rights, where they're trying to petition the government and write to MPs and trying to create that change in the UK.
Okay, well, yeah, I'll share. Send me all the stuff and I'll share it.
I will do.
So I don't get put in prison. Imagine.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on to talk to me about everything.
It's been so lovely. Thank you for having me on again.
Oh, you're very welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Hi. Oh, yes, that was lovely Naomi. I will share her details. If you have any questions, please contact her. I probably can't answer many of your questions, if I'm honest, other than tell you about my experience, which is positive. So yeah, I would recommend it. But yeah, I hope you learnt some stuff, or it answered some questions for you if you had any. Thank you for listening. Thanks as always to my lovely sponsors, Proudess. If you don't know who Proudess are, it will change your life. Proudess.com. And the lovely Golding Accountancy, who's my guest next week. Well, not next week, the week after, where we won't be talking about accounts. Don't worry. I hope you have a lovely festive season and New Year celebrations if you're into that sort of thing. If not, I hope you have a nice break and are happy. And I hope you're not too affected by all the terrible things going on in the world at the moment. It's all been very upsetting. I do hope that it all comes to an end soon and everyone is happy and love is spread. And yeah, I hope you're okay. Sending love to you all. I will see you. Stay safe and sane. I've got a cold. You can probably hear I'm a bit bummed up. I hope you haven't got one. Stay well. Work. Stay happy. Spread the love. And I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Work.
Bye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.